SCP-9341, Containment Breach, Capacity, Part 2. Usually when the Foundation has a containment breach, some monster gets loose for a bit, munches on a few people, it gets recontained, and business goes on as usual. In SCP-9341, however, this containment breach has been such a mess that multiple versions of the site have become unusable, and problems are still ongoing. Last time, we looked at the version of the site that's still intact, through Gate A, and mostly learned some background info about the Chaos Insurgency and their actions that led to the situation there, where it's now stuck in some sort of perpetual time loop. Things are only going to get worse from here. Let's take a look. We'll continue by checking out the other version of the site, through Gate B, where it was destroyed by the on-site nuclear warheads. We're informed that entering Gate B requires a radiation-resistant hazmat suit, and all movement on the facility grounds are to strictly follow the navigational guide. The nuclear warheads were activated after a site-wide containment breach of multiple Keter-class anomalies, in particular SCP-682, the hard-to-destroy reptile, and SCP-9341-A, the researcher-turned-D-class Benjamin Walker. After MTF Epsilon-11 failed to contain 682, they decided to activate the warheads as a last measure of containment. The warheads successfully demolished the building and terminated all entities and anomalies inside Site CB, including Walker, and 682 was recontained. Several anomalies were nevertheless able to escape and subsequently spread the anomalous condition among multiple settlements in the region. The causal instability of 9341 further manifests centered in the Omega Warhead Silo, through which a different version of the site, the inner Gate B facility, can be entered, where the Alpha Warheads were never activated. Basically, I put a branching timeline inside of your branching timeline. More information has been archived in the Omega Warhead Silo, and we're provided a navigational guideline to safely reach there if we want. We're also told that no incidents in the region can be officially tied to the Foundation by other groups of interest. Let's glance at the effects the explosion had on the building in a Clearance Level 4 document. The author, Dr. Tubinin, writes that it is not his room to judge the decision of why the Alpha Warheads were activated, but he can judge everything that went into the placement of the warheads. The Modular Site Project sees the placement of 5 hydrogen bombs in the facility, 4 1-kiloton Alpha Warheads underground, but above the rest of the facility, and 1 5-megaton Omega Warhead beneath the facility. The Alpha Warheads serve the purpose of destroying the surface zone, presumably for a case like the 682 breakout, while a blast shield protects the rest of the site. The Omega Warhead, however, will destroy the site and everything within 5 miles. What the Alpha Warheads actually did was leave a visible explosion behind, destroying the surface area as intended, and crumbling the facility, unprotected by a faulty blast shield. He doesn't know who approved this. The Foundation's nuclear arsenal follows a simple policy of staying unnoticed. Any building harboring a warhead needs to be built to contain the resulting explosion from reaching anything beyond the facility. A visible, above-ground explosion is unacceptable. A warhead that obliterates anything around the site and not just the site itself is technically allowed because the plan restricts it to only activate with O5 approval, but he thinks it's still utterly ridiculous. It's possible the blast shield was not faulty, but only damaged by 682. Given what he's heard about the rest of the Modular Site Project, he doubts it, however. He also mentions what others have been saying about the Tesla gates, and were given a complaint about them at Clearance Level 3. The Tesla gate is a Tesla coil covering an open space in a hallway, together with a motion sensor on both sides of the gate. The coil is activated by nearby detected movement, resulting in a terminal voltage being run through the gate, terminating any non-anomalous organism coming into contact with it. Seems like somebody played some Red Alert growing up. They were employed in hallways constructed in line with the modular site project to supposedly ensure ease of recontainment, and are activated during a containment breach. While recontainment teams can deactivate them to proceed unharmed, the gate will appear as a dead end to any escaping D-class personnel or breach instigators. Together with the HID turret, it is also one of the countermeasures devised to stun SCP-106. The gates are currently used in SCP-9341, Site-118, Site-19, and planned to be used in many other sites. The case study of Site-CB shows the usefulness of the gates to be anomaly dependent, however, as SCP-173 and SCP-96, the Shy Guy, were able to avoid any negative repercussions from crossing them. Outside of the other issues, Tesla gates should only be used when effective for the majority of contained anomalies. The gates can also be circumvented by a regular person with the right timing. While this has only been demonstrated by Walker, his anomaly seems to only impart itself in predictive capabilities, and as such, all of his individual actions are replicable and serve as a real concern in stopping any intelligent and motivated target from crossing the gates. This is exacerbated by recontainment teams having to stop in front of Tesla gates and wait for command to deactivate it. Since the modular site project is most likely an act of intentional sabotage, they have to assume that all aspects of it, including Tesla gates, to be a stepping stone towards the eventual breach of a nuclear-infested SCP-682. Rescuing personnel has also been made more difficult through the Tesla gates, and there has been one confirmed fatality during the breach in SCP-9341, as well as one during a malfunction prior to the breach. Outside of the use case of a deliberate containment effort of SCP-106, the Department of Containment recommends to replace Tesla gates with normal security gates that automatically close during a breach, but can be locally overwritten by recontainment teams. Sensible, but definitely not cooler than Tesla gates. There's another document connected to the discussion about a nuclear-infested SCP-682, but it's only provided at clearance level 2, meaning it's heavily redacted. Things are going to get very complicated soon with navigating through these files, but for now, let's continue with clearance level 4 wherever we can. Let's go back to the navigational guide to reach the Omega Warhead silo safely, which states that reaching it simply involves following the signposted path, which takes the form of a spiral leading into the sinkhole at the center, of which the elevator to the intact silo can be found. Personnel are advised not to take shortcuts, and all proposals for restructuring the path that would destabilize the form of the spiral will be denied going forward without question. No one may stay or sit in the same space for more than an hour, although in an emergency, sitting and staying on the main spiral is allowed. The level of radioactivity will increase as you progress on the spiral. While the radiation at the end of the spiral would be lethal, adhering to the containment procedures and wearing a hazmat suit will insulate you from any negative effects. Movement outside the main path, primarily to analyze the debris and the ingrown fungus, has to still loosely follow the spiral pattern. A worker starting their day at the top of the spiral should end their day in front of the elevator. It's enough to keep this in mind, as a small conscious reminder is enough to keep the phenomenon self-reinforcing. Routinely, all signs, scaffolds, and walkways need to be checked for existence. As non-existence will go unnoticed by on-site personnel, workers are instead to focus on places where they have not yet put one. Before we head into the silo, we're given some info about that ingrown radioactive fungus. Most of the debris is covered in it, and it functions through a likely anomalous form of radiosynthesis, using ionizing radiation energy as well as the otherwise inorganic material of the debris for its metabolism. The fungus has shown inconsistent reactions to interactions with it. When introduced to new material, it will either grow at the slow speed typical of a fungus, or rapidly increase its metabolism to incorporate the new material, resulting in its growth becoming visible without equipment. It also exhibits similar varied reactions to damage. The fungus avoids the surface, usually being found under a thin layer of debris. It encompasses the entirety of the sinkhole except for the main spiral, which has been observed to be entirely fungus-free. The fungus is also believed to be one single organism. No reactions were visible to a part of the fungus being separated from the greater organism, and over time, the separated parts grew together again. Research into the fungus eventually revealed that it should have used up all parts of the debris and the radiation pollution used by its metabolism in the time of its research. The fact that it has not suggests both the radiation and the debris to continually renew themselves, thereby creating an infinite food source for the fungus. We're then given a bunch of redacted info, as this is only the level 3 version of this document, but we'll get back to the fungus later. Let's now head into the Omega Warhead silo, where we're told that exploration of the inner Gate B facility requires approval by the active HMCL supervisor of 9341, which is currently vacant and left to O5 command. To begin the exploration, deactivate the remote Alpha Warhead detonation, and when you're done, the warhead must be activated again before leaving through the elevator. No explorations will be approved in the foreseeable future. The practice of disassembling the Omega warhead as soon as its presence is noticed again has been discontinued until a permanent measure of removing the warhead has been found. Deactivating the remote detonations changes the state of the facility above the silo to one where the Alpha warheads were never activated, known as the Inner Gate B facility. This version was subject to major destruction caused by SCP-682, but all of the facility except for the surface zone is reachable with effort. Unlike the consequence of the nuclear explosion, no anomaly was destroyed or damaged by the cave-in of the Inner Gate B facility, making it possible to retrieve all anomalies transferred to Site CB. Walker cannot be found in the Inner Gate B facility, and it's known through MTF testimony that he died during the initial confrontation with 682. The Inner Gate B facility is still subject to occasional shifting layouts at a reduced rate, despite Walker's missing presence. We're given only one more document from here, the excavation log at clearance level 3. Each exploration of the Inner Gate B facility must be done with a specific goal of what anomaly or information needs to be excavated. It should consist of exactly 13 people with various specifications, with at least 6 of them having been here before, at least 6 that have never visited here before, and various specialties amongst them. All anomalies originally stationed at Site CB could be retrieved through excavation. Their behavior has been described as cyclic, following a pattern of being contained and subsequently breaching containment. While this pattern necessarily requires the presence of personnel in the facility, no living human could ever be excavated after the first excavation. The first exploration was started accidentally, as the Omega warhead was to be disassembled. For safety, all remote warhead detonations were deactivated during the procedure. Using the elevator afterwards revealed the Inner Gate B facility. Exactly one room was explored by the worker before they returned and reversed their actions. SCP-682 was then excavated together with all surviving members of the battle against it. 682 was too big for the elevator and thus had to be transported in parts. SCP-173 was trapped in a containment cycle without any outside involvement, where it would routinely get stuck in a room and start to scrape at the door until it was broken either by the scraping or through the substance that it is accompanied by. While it was deeper inside the facility, it was chosen as the next excavation target as the substance was close to reaching the warhead silo elevator. At the point of excavation, the substance had spread to most tunnels visited by the team. Most anomalies could be excavated without issue, each showing behavior slightly deviating from prior experienced breaches that contributed to the worsening state of the inner Gate B facility. SCP-079 was originally a low-priority target due to its stationary nature, but was declared a high priority as a consequence of the Blaka 1 crisis. When it was found, it was attempting to regain control of what remained of the facility. It had almost succeeded when the excavation team arrived and recontained it. This excavation sparked the idea for the Warden-Walker Protocol, the first successful application of which was the excavation of SCP-035. It was also tested when excavating all the anomalous ducts in the facility, but the team was unable to find all anomalous ducts. SCP-106 did not originally exist in the Inner Gate B facility, but it successfully breached containment from its new containment site and reached the Inner Gate B facility through its pocket dimension. The excavation team found it in one of the Class D cells on an unrelated excavation, and managed to contain it via improvised designation of a lure subject. That's a very proper way of putting it, I suppose. A year after the last excavation mission, an investigation of several missing SCPs revealed transfer papers to Site CB, despite the incident causing SCP-9341 classification predating all transfers. The exploration mission revealed those SCPs to be contained in the Inner Gate B facility, and routine excavation missions were restarted until all SCPs were recovered. That sounds pretty unusual, so let's follow up on that first. Unfortunately, it's only in clearance level 2, so it's pretty redacted. Basically, a few SCPs disappeared on the same day, with the initial assessment being a secret transfer hidden behind a level 5 clearance. While the investigation would normally be closed when extending into level 5 clearance, it was unusual that one of them, SCP-1048-A, was transferred, as it had never been formally contained at all. 1048 is a sapient teddy bear capable of making crude replicas of itself that display extreme violence towards humans. A deeper assessment revealed a string of disappearances on a semi-regular basis, with each disappearance followed by an investigation that was cut short. Based on these findings, the investigator reached out to an office, presumably the O5s, who acknowledged the request, though a brief conversation revealed the personnel to be unfamiliar with it. The matter was raised to Ryza, who declassified the files for the purpose of this investigation. All involved SCPs had been transferred to Site CB, with all transfer documents implying that the anomalies were being transferred to the site as it was before the incident. Furthermore, all of the transferred anomalies end up needing to be excavated, as all new SCPs are completely annihilated by the structural collapse of the regular site. Based on all interrogated accounts, it can be assumed that these transfers are not official, and are instead retroactively created by SCP-9341. The recommended procedure going forward is for transfer documents to be exempt from the clearance policy, and for some redacted stuff. Reactivating projects like the Warden-Walker Protocol are promising options. We're provided the corresponding file for the Warden-Walker Protocol, which sounds pretty cool, but it's only at clearance level 1, which means that it's nearly completely redacted. Nearly completely, however, and some words are left unredacted, seeming to form sentences. The unredacted parts read, "Access to files necessary. If warden is needed, abort. Regardless of outcome, begin anomaly transfer to crisis where time hypothesized unpredictable. Regular activation remains." Curious. And what's more, there's a link here amidst the redactions, which leads to a clearance level 4 document titled Anonymous Complaint. It reads, "Have we learned nothing? How can this be the response to the largest containment breach we had in recent history? We know what caused this, what led to it. This is not the time to double down. Further restricting any contact D-Class have with other personnel and each other will not help, because they already had next to no contact to anyone. The full employee retention program is a cruel joke, and the fact I know enough to say this to you means it has already failed, no matter how many of them you transfer to sites of unknown faces. And don't forget that the D-Class didn't cause the breach. At best, these new policies will just make the cleanup of the next breach easier, not prevent it. At worst, these new restrictions will just add pressure on already existing resentments. And that's what this is. Long-lasting general resentment benefiting from very specific and personal grudges. You keep handling this as a military confrontation when that is nothing but the symptom of what's happening. I don't care about whatever ideological differences the insurgency split over. What I care about is how they turned into a boiling pot of resentment, and that we keep feeding it. Okay, well, the most interesting part of this is, of course, that there might be more info hidden under low clearance level documents. Let's back up a bit, and go read some more about SCP-682 in a supplementary file. It's also only at clearance level 2, but the containment procedures mention something about how there's two anomalies, and they'll be contained at different facilities. 682 is a large, intelligent, reptilian creature with regenerative abilities whose created body mass loosely corresponds to the energy taken in via digestion of any liquid it is in contact with. The digestion and speed of regeneration form an equilibrium with its corrosion through its primary containment acid. Its most noteworthy characteristic is its hatred of all life, with SCP-079 being the only known exception that it has shown a comparatively positive attitude to. 682 has been the test subject of several termination attempts, which have since been discontinued due to resulting in frequent containment breaches and the anomaly having been shown to be unexpectedly amicable to its current containment solution. I would think that's a pretty bad thing in this case. 682 was excavated from the inner Gate B facility, but we have insufficient clearance to view the file on the other anomaly related to 682. For the brief time it was contained in the destroyed version of 9341, it settled into a pattern with its containment staff. It would lie in its makeshift containment chamber and growl something. A guard would feel threatened and give off a warning shot. 682 would breach containment and pursue the guard. Staff would engage it and force it back into containment, and all injuries would be healed completely with the help of first aid kits before the cycle starts again. A bunch of info is then redacted, but it says that a continuation of the termination attempts has been ordered to keep another NK-class gray goo scenario from occurring. 682 must be destroyed as soon as possible, as current containment is imperfect, and it will eventually adapt out of it. Well, that's pretty ominous, as a gray goo scenario would involve an organism reproducing endlessly until it covers the planet and beyond. Some of you may already have an idea what the other anomaly involved here is, but we'll keep reading. We're given a file at clearance level 2 on the battle the MTF had when containing 682, written up by the captain of Aerial Task Force Delta 41. He takes pride in his team's response speed, so he's proud to say that it only took seconds to get out of the helicopters and onto the ground, as soon as it was clear the nuke couldn't go through. That's when the fight with 682 started, with Epsilon 11 and the rest of the helicopters soon joining them. He's been told there was a D-class, Walker, shot down during the fight. A bunch of info is redacted, but the only sure thing is that he died early on. The fight itself followed standard procedure, which makes it sound easy, but they barely made it out alive, and not all of them did. It's strange though, as it was almost like 682 stopped trying to escape after a certain point. It was still aggressive, but it felt almost performative. No helicopters survived the battle to his knowledge, and the fight dragged them all further underground. 682 was successfully recontained and moved off the site at a later point. All that was left was waiting until they were excavated. He doubts that any of them expected the way they left the site and what would greet them on the other side. it's rare to so starkly see what failure looks like. He doesn't know about Epsilon 11, but his team is definitely coming out of this with a promotion. He knows what happened to the other version of his team, and honestly, he's glad they're dead. Who knows what would have happened had they made it out? What version of them would have gotten what merit? There's enough competition already. No reason to compete with himself. It sure still seems like we're continually getting more questions than answers. We'll look at the after-action report for the other version of the team next. When 682 breached containment and was engaged by all available Apache helicopters, a strong radio transmission was sent from Site CB to an unknown receiver. Since it became clear that 682 wasn't being damaged at all, Security Chief Franklin made the executive decision to activate the warheads, and they were detonated shortly after. 10 minutes later, he ordered the MTFs to check for signs of 682's survival, but this order was refused due to the acute danger of radiation poisoning, until one helicopter agreed to take on the task. Contact was lost with the helicopter soon after, when a roar from 682 was heard, prompting Franklin to send in all remaining helicopters and available MTF units. The helicopters were only able to spot upper portions of 682, with the only testimony given by ground troops being, "It's in the bricks." All helicopter units were destroyed by 682, while the ground troops were terminated by something unassigned that was escaping. Despite no agents surviving the encounter, the MTF members were able to contain the instances of the unassigned anomaly with makeshift containment solutions. While Franklin had the authority to override common containment practices in emergency situations, the order to not use nukes on 682 came directly from the O5s and shouldn't have been overwritten. The helicopters were all lost, but the MTF members were all replaced with the other versions of themselves excavated from the Inner Gate B facility. We're still getting nowhere fast, but now that we know that certain redacted documents might reveal extra information, let's go back a bit to that complaint we read about the Tesla gates, but this time as a Level 1 clearance document. The words amidst the redactions read, "Open the gates. Be motivated to act. Breach SCP-106. A link embedded in there sends us to a document that appears to have been written on toilet paper, listed as Clearance Level 4. It reads, "I'd give you tips, but either you're 9341-A and don't need me, or you're stuck here as I am. In case my hypothesis is incorrect, just in case, I am currently stuck in 106's pocket dimension. There is no way out. I got ambushed when I was looking into inconsistencies of Gate B documents. Save for the archive guards, the place is deserted. No chance they'll find out 106 is hiding here until the next excavation, whenever that is. I've been navigating. I've seen the logs. I know the layout. We have evidence, thanks to A, that leaving is possible. I don't have super luck or future prediction or whatever, but I've been through this thing dozens of times now. If there ever was an exit, it is gone now." It always comes back to this intersection of halls, then a plethora of victims trapped in cages, corroding at a speed it deems fit. The throne it has set in its own domain, and the trench from which it came. It's just halls, cages, the throne room, and the trench. No exit. Just again, halls, cages, throne, trench, halls, cages, throne, trench, halls, cages, throne, trench, cages. You can only leave if it lets you. A link embedded in there leads us back to Gate A, so let's poke around here some more, starting with a document about the entanglement breach we've been hearing about. An entanglement breach affects two anomalies, Walker and SCP-106. The breach is in progress as soon as two conditions are met. 106 is currently on the surface, and it is not contained. Walker will abruptly vanish from Site CB when the breach is triggered, and it is unknown what happens to him during this time. The service tunnel he escaped from will revert to its state during his escape, and the agents killed by the anomalous event will again cease bodily function. 106's hunting behavior will change depending on its proximity to Site CB, starting to predict tactics used against it the closer it is. A correlation between entanglement breaches and retroactive changes to Site CB during the containment breach has been found, with most revisions including the containment of 106 by Walker via the recall protocol, presumably to make escaping the facility easier without attacks by 106. This event is missing whenever an entanglement breach occurs. For whatever reason, containment of 106 in the present ensures its containment in the past. No other actions have been found to affect the events of the breach, and it's noted that the Gate B facility is similarly subject to a present action causing a change in the site in the form of the Omega Warhead. It's been proposed that the occurrence of entanglement breaches may cease entirely should Walker and 106 come into contact again. This has been deemed too risky to test, as Walker has shown himself adept in navigating 106's pocket dimension. To keep the risk of entanglement breaches to a minimum, the list of sites allowed to contain 106 has been restricted to facilities large enough to make containment of 106 before it reaches the surface a likely occurrence. It is unknown if entanglement only functions in one direction, or if Walker's escape would also result in a breach of 106. We're then provided a supplemental report on 106 at clearance level 1. The words amidst the redactions read, "Research approved it for escape. Openings will be created. SCP-9341-A is able to escape. Breach SCP-106. A link there sends us to another clearance level 4 document, constituting the reconstruction of a recording intended to be sent off-site during the containment breach, which failed due to the communications lockdown. The message was partly scrambled by the reprogramming caused by SCP-079's takeover of the facility. It reads, "Can you hear me? I hope this comes through. It should be worse with audio. Too many other codes to keep track of. This is important whenever you hear this. I made contact with 990, the Dream Man. No, it contacted me. Tried to. It's like there was a filter, a bad reception. It only got through spaghettified, like its prophecies mixed up. I remembered nothing when I woke up, but now I remember. Because it's everything. Because it is happening, and it's always just. It's there today, and yesterday, not tomorrow. Tomorrow I get myself the best amnestics cocktail they can make, and get myself peace of mind. But now, it is today. Why is it always happening today? Or is it always yesterday? Sorry, that probably won't help you, because it was already. The message wasn't even intended for me. I think I just got a tip of the spaghetti. There is one I got, a warning, missing from the rest of the dish. A single spaghetto all to myself. He is just toying with you. That's it. That's the whole message. That's it. Is it? No. The date. 2026-06-05. That's his next breach, yes. Watch out. That's it. A date in the not far off future. Let's go ahead back to the only other time we've been concerned with a date, to enter the observational chamber for Walker and punch it in. Well, that gets us to a starkly different document, one that appears to be written by the Chaos Insurgency. The foreword reads, "We must never forget we are fighting a titan. The Foundation has built itself up as an insurmountable monolith. It cannot show weakness. Any crack in its facade is an admission that its normalcy is not infallible, that all veils will die by a thousand cuts. Today we made that crack. It cost us, but the Foundation will fear our raids for years to come. The next step is to deepen that crack, make it spread to anyone willing to look at the Foundation for what it is. Hereafter, Delta Commander Damian O'Connor will order in line with the steps of the plan as transcribed by the engineer of Delta Command and its cells. Step 1 states that he has put them together as the best raiders from Foundation Feast. This is no future raid, but it is just as important. They have been briefed about the facility and what they believe will soon transpire there. Mark the occasion, but do not mark the date. It is of paramount importance that they are there on the day of the containment breach. Take this as their only reference point on when they need to be where he has ordered them to. Step 2 states that when the containment breach is happening, it is of vital importance that they do not participate. This is not their breach. The Foundation expects a raid, and they are not one to play into the expectation of their enemy. He has given them so little information about the layout because this is all they will need. Getting to the service tunnel at the right moment will be enough of a task as is. They will find their access to their anomalous arsenal has increased. Take the staff of Hermes, if they must. Step 3 states that there are two possibilities they will face after the breach has started slowing down. Be prepared for both. The first is easy. Nothing happens. The target was captured before he could get to them. Do not try to engage the task force to get the target out anyway. Just silently leave their post the way they entered. The Foundation must not suspect insurgency involvement in this scenario. The second case, the target finds them. Expect the target to flee into the tunnel on hot pursuit by the task force. Deal with them as you see fit. The Foundation is allowed to suspect an anomalous event, but revealed insurgency presence should still be kept to an absolute minimum. Extract the target. Step 4 is to drop the target at the designated drop-off point. Another convoy will bring the target to us for debriefing. We're then provided a conversation between O'Connor, the engineer, and Walker. The engineer greets Walker and says that he's a fan of his work, but Walker is confused as to where he is. O'Connor tells him that he's safe in Base B of the insurgency, but Walker is still a bit out of it. The engineer tells him that he is but a seed, cut off from his nest by time and space. Walker replies that he sees where this is going, and he says no. He really hates the Foundation right now, but he doesn't want to be here for a recruitment offer. The engineer tells him that they're well past that point. Subversion is the essence of insurgency, and the inverse of a prison is its break. He couldn't ask for a finer insurgent. This is more like a pep talk, as he's been doing very well so far, and he'd like him to not give up. He's found one way out. A tiny leak in the Foundation leading to the insurgency, but it's a leak they must close. There are several options available to him, as the full of the Gestalt would be a valuable asset in the fight against the Foundation. Their troops could use the morale boost of a tangible result from their raids. They would also accept intel as the only compensation for his rescue, everything he has on 053 and her projects. Walker asks what project, and O'Connor says the one that got him his demotion. Walker can't really remember anything, though, although he says he can see a path where he might have remembered. O'Connor calls it another dead end, then, and the engineer says that Walker will arrive at his goal one way or another. Drop by drop, the dam must break, and O'Connor prepares his gun. So, the Chaos Insurgency was majorly involved in the breach here, which we already knew, but their goal was pretty specifically to get Walker out. As for what makes him special, we need to learn a little bit more about the project he worked on before becoming a D-class, the Spiral Gestalt. Let's go back a bit again and check out the file on Walker, first at clearance level 3, then 1. Walker is the focal point of 9341's causal inconsistencies, and his main anomaly expresses itself in retroactive changes to the past during the containment breach, reflecting different actions taken during his escape attempt before reaching Gate A. In some revisions, he has reached Gate A with as yet undiscovered anomalies likely created through SCP-914. All other items encountered by Walker may end up displaced, destroyed, or confiscated upon reaching Gate A, depending on the revision. A revision may be accompanied by a minor time dilation effect, ensuring certain events happen at a specific point in time. As an example, MTF Epsilon 11 has always entered the facility at the moment Walker entered the entrance zone, despite Epsilon having consistently taken 10 minutes in every revision. In contrast, Walker took a variable amount of time. The shortest time he has taken from his position at the start of the containment breach to Gate A is 3 minutes and 24 seconds, using 106's pocket dimension as a shortcut. In another revision, he took multiple hours to reach Gate A and died of blood loss as soon as he was apprehended. He will, on occasion, vanish from his containment chamber for the duration of an entanglement breach. Only one round of testing and a preliminary interview with Walker was possible before the arrival of O5 personnel and the start of causal isolation. These interactions have been classified, and all involved Foundation personnel amnestized by order of an O5 to ensure causal containment. Declassified conclusions taken from these interactions include Walker performing perfectly at tested tasks, Walker appearing delirious and remarking he felt like he had lost something, Walker on a few occasions speaking in plural, referring to himself or the site, and Walker being intimately familiar with all aspects of the site. The initial conclusion reached for his circumstances was that he was trapped in a time loop, always concluding with his capture at Gate A. The continuing past revisions were rationalized as attempts to leave the site without capture, inevitably proving futile. These conclusions have since been discarded, as not all revisions show a linear improvement of his capabilities as a time loop would imply. Multiple interviews corroborate the existence of revisions where he does not come close to reaching Gate A, as if he completely forgot preceding loops. The loop hypothesis is also unable to explain the changes in the site layout, the time dilation, or the split into two versions of the facility, depending through which gate it is entered. As a result of the causal isolation, it's unclear how he experiences these revisions, as well as any potential effects on his personality or emotional state. While led to believe that he had achieved D-class status due to being a death row inmate, he belonged to the group of Class D personnel not authorized for 100% lethal operations, like an SCP-106 lure subject. Now let's look at the clearance level 1 version. The words amidst the redactions read, "Special is the contagion in this narrative. Cascading changes by blood vanish without capture. Enter the lure of the Spiral Gestalt." We're then given another link to the document discussing Project Spiral Gestalt. Despite being a level 4 clearance file, it's heavily redacted. It seems to have involved the study of pattern-based extra-ontological entities, dating back to the investigation of the origin of the Fleshful Rain event. There's an inherent danger in observing these entities, and prior projects of a similar nature are therefore to be considered lost. The phenomenon, later dubbed the Spiral Gestalt, has a conceptual existence that requires a physical counterpart. We're provided a list of multiple incidents connected to the anomaly, although much of this is redacted. They seem to mention some protests, someone wrongfully imprisoned for more than 10 years, several instances during the Arab Spring, a series of anti-government protests and rebellions in the early 2010s, and several other protests around the world. Something increases the likelihood of it only being dependent on a single host at a time. Only one O5 was allowed to have full knowledge of the project, presumably O5-3, and a senior researcher, presumably Walker, noticed something during the research, exceeding the research he was allowed to do as a part of the project dealing with volatile information. He was not a host prior to his demotion, and the project has been deemed a failure. Alright, so now we can tell that Project Spiral Gestalt came from studying pattern-based extra-ontological entities, or pattern screamers, entities that escaped the destruction of a prior universe by embedding themselves into the fabric of reality. Pattern screamers are notoriously pretty dangerous to study, as they grow stronger through observation, so it's not too surprising that this document is so heavily redacted. Spiral Gestalt requires a physical host, and it seems to choose a host based around some criteria connected to protests and wrongful imprisonment. Walker was a senior researcher on the Spiral Gestalt team, and noticed something about it, which caused him to research a bit too much. This resulted in his demotion to D-class, which also triggered him becoming the host to the Spiral Gestalt. What the Gestalt actually does is a bit murkier, and it seems that the Foundation isn't quite clear on how it works either, other than it allows him to experience different revisions of time, similar to a time loop. Sometimes, his knowledge is shared across revisions, allowing him to have perfect knowledge of the site and complete tasks perfectly, and other times he seems to have completely forgotten everything he had learned. I said in the first part that knowledge of the game Containment Breach doesn't seem to be necessary to understand this article, but that's not quite the case. I think it's important to understand that this article is based on a game, as it makes a lot of the pieces fit together. You see, the Spiral Gestalt is the in-game explanation for why the main character, Walker, is able to utilize game saves and reload them. Anytime he would die, he can just reload his save and try again, doing so over and over until even the most bumbling fool can manage to escape alive. Beyond that, though, the idea of the whole thing being a game answers other questions. The site layout changes sometimes because the game's map is procedurally generated. There are multiple versions of the facility because of an update that added Gate B and multiple endings. Walker sometimes completely forgets how to escape because a new player has started the game and has never played before. We know from other articles that the Foundation's universe is pataphysically linked to our own, and it is subject to the whims of the authors. A game based in the Foundation's universe is no different, even though in this case, it's a lot more bewildering for them to understand. The Chaos Insurgency, however, whether they realize it's a game or not, recognizes the value of Walker's anomaly, and his main character energy, so to speak. They engineered the containment breach to try to get him out and get some info about this anomaly, but so far it seems it's been fairly fruitless. There's still a couple of things we want to look into before ending, although I'm not going to look at every document in this mess. Let's read a bit about the Blaka 1 crisis mentioned a few times in relation to SCP-079. Using what I call a pro-gamer move, rather than navigating through the cluster of files to find the version we want, let's just change the URL from a 2 to a 4. The Foundation never thought of that one. Looking at the clearance level 4 version of the file then, we see that when SCP-079 took over most of the systems of Site CB during the breach, it rewrote facility systems not essential to its primary focus into extensions of itself, then searched for any information about nearby civilization centers. It used information gained from email correspondence and video logs to find a target device which would be able to receive 079 over radio. The breach of 682 was very likely orchestrated as a distraction, while 079 transferred itself from Site CB to the target device, which belonged to the sister of a Foundation guard stationed at the site. 079 had become familiar enough with the model to manipulate it per radio transmission into a copy of itself. From there, it spread to all devices in its vicinity. Counterintelligence reports suggest that the GOC became aware of 079 and the danger it posed halfway through the anomaly converting all electronic devices in the city. Given the immediate response, it can be assumed that the GOC used the Silicon Nornir, three sapient supercomputers, to predict the events. The Foundation only became aware of 079's escape through channels in the Coalition. Its escape from Site CB had gone unnoticed due to the destruction of the site. The GOC contacted Pentagram, the occult branch of the US Department of Defense, in order to fully lock down the internet in the region, the most likely escape vector of 79. The lockdown was further strengthened through a large-scale ritual by GOC member organization Electorate of Demomancers, causing, coincidentally, no internet traffic going out or into the region for the duration of the crisis. As soon as the lockdown was implemented, 79 sent conflicting messages about an evacuation to many devices, resulting in small groups of civilians being hoarded at different points across the city. Most of them were put in situations where malfunctions of nearby electronic devices could result in injury. A Coalition strike team was transported to directly engage with a threat, now designated Blaka 1 by Pentagram and the GOC. 79 sent a list of demands in exchange for the hostages' release over Coalition-restricted channels, but all the demands were rejected. While both groups restricted the options available to 79 through the internet lockdown and citywide jamming attempts, 79 was able to manipulate the state of nearby devices solely through atmospheric changes controlled through minute changes in the heating and fans of devices under its control. The calculations for this appear to have been extensive enough that it could do nothing else while taking over another device in this way. It's unknown how all the instances of 79 stayed in contact, but its actions cannot be explained otherwise. While Pentagram also deployed soldiers to the city, they went mostly ignored by 79 correctly identifying them as government agents. Its efforts were focused on the strike team, presumably believed to be Foundation agents. Both groups were able to evacuate high-profile targets and hostages in critical danger, before the Coalition activated an unidentified para-weapon sending repeated electromagnetic pulses across the city, save for designated exclusion zones. All instances of 79 in the city were terminated, and the incident was resolved. Foundation Regional Command opened an emergency excavation mission to get 79 out of the inner Gate B facility. It was then transported to a divination-blocking containment chamber. Channels of the Coalition revealed they had assumed some instances of the anomaly had escaped the city, but none could be detected. Research into this phenomenon resulted in the creation of the Warden-Walker Protocol, later successfully applied to SCP-035. At the conclusion of the crisis, a meeting was held between the GOC, Pentagram, and the Foundation. The two GOIs noted multiple incidents in the region, mentioning the creation of Nexus 35, the Blaka 1 crisis, as well as multiple smaller incidents associated with something unassigned. No information was revealed by the Foundation, but it is assumed both organizations suspect a major containment breach as the source of the incident. The existence of Site CB should be vehemently denied on the next US Foundation Budget Allocation Conference. This crisis is believed to be the first incident of a rogue artificial intelligence involving multiple normalcy organizations. It has since been revealed that Pentagram allotted itself an extra budget to create an anti-AI focused division. This Warden-Walker protocol has come up a couple of times now, so let's read a little bit more about that. The protocol makes use of two different components of SCP-9341's anomaly. The first is the effect of excavation, replacing the SCP as it exists in the outside world, with the anomaly recovered from the inner Gate B facility, at the moment the excavation concludes. This was first noted when 079 was excavated as a result of the Blaka 1 crisis, where it had been assumed that multiple instances of 79 still existed outside containment. After excavation, the excavated instance was the only one remaining. The first limited application of the protocol focused solely on the excavation of anomalies originally contained at Site CB that had breached containment. Notably, it had not applied to the original excavation of SCP-682, with something unassigned remaining undeterred. It's possible the protocol might prove ineffective if an anomaly has changed too much from its original state. The only other anomaly this applied to at the time was SCP-035, which had taken a town hostage, making regular containment difficult. The second component of the protocol is the anomalous transfer mechanism by which new anomalies are retroactively involved in the containment breach. This was at the time not understood to happen without prompting. The effect was hypothesized and confirmed by transferring several anomalous ducts. The protocol is currently inactive, denied on the authority of 053 due to the effects of new anomalies inserted into 9341 being deemed too unpredictable. Upon the realization that anomalies were being semi-regularly transferred to 9341 regardless, however, the activation of the Warden-Walker protocol was again requested on the basis of regular excavations being a necessity anyway, with the small addition of anomalies inserted via the protocol not making a difference. The activation remains denied. So basically, 79 broke containment and got into a nearby city where it started copying itself onto every device it could. The GOC and the Pentagram came in and locked down the whole area, not allowing any internet traffic in or out. Even they were pretty sure 79 got out of that somehow, likely before they even showed up, which would likely have proven pretty disastrous for the Foundation. Thankfully, however, they discovered that by digging 79 out of the ruins of Gate B, that version of 79 became the only version in existence, wiping out all the others. They also discovered that this effect works for anything that was originally contained at Site CB. They decided against transferring anomalies retroactively to the site in order to exploit this effect. But as mentioned previously, anomalies are somehow being transferred to the site retroactively anyways. That just leaves one last mystery, the nature of this unassigned thing that keeps popping up. We're heading back to Gate B for this one, and if we end up on the page discussing the radioactive fungus at the clearance level 1 version, the words read, "Anomalous form of metabolism. It will grow together again and continually renew. Given other aspects is that young fungus behavior." From here, we're linked to the level 4 file for the unassigned anomaly, which is given Keter class. It is a radioactive tumor, subject both to rapid decay and fast regeneration, capable of facilitating movement by growing in a specific direction while its cells are rotting behind it. Using this method, it is constantly in motion. Its body mass stays the same throughout the motion, unless it decides to grow in two different directions at once, in which case its body mass is split in half. The inside of the tumor is infected with a radiotropic fungus, which uses radioactive energy to sustain itself and the tumor. The decaying cells of the tumor, in turn, have managed to rot away into nothing but radioactive energy. It has limited control over this process, as it has been observed not to absorb 100% of its created radioactive energy, or to leave cells not fully decayed behind. The latter has occurred more often during feeding. The tumor has been observed to feed on any liquid provided to it, but has shown a preference for bodily fluids, reached by growing into a person or animal. The tumor will continue to feed until it has reached thrice its original body mass, at which point it will split into two and search for other sources of liquid, regardless of whether the original source has been used up or not. We're then informed that the tumor accounts for 50% of the body mass of SCP-682 after it was hit by the alpha warheads of Site CB. Following the explosion, it underwent rapid regeneration, culminating in a radiotropic fungus infecting the remains of Site CB, and the tumor using said fungus for its bodily function. In all termination attempts on 682 so far, it has shown a strong preference for regenerating into a singular instance. In the rare case where multiple instances regenerated, one was eaten by the larger one, ultimately always culminating in a single 682. It is unknown why this new form has abandoned the notion of a single body. The tumor was likewise completely unaffected by the recovery of 682 using the excavation method. Following the breach, it spread out from Site CB in all directions. Contact was made with 3 points of residence before recontainment teams could catch up to the anomaly. No evacuation was possible, as no believable cover story could be developed in the brief time, not in breach of the Veil protocol. Large portions of the tumor had not spread further yet and could be recontained when recontainment teams caught up. Isolated survivors were recovered and amnesticized at all points of residence. Death rates were high due to the tumor's feeding behavior. Estimating based on this last increase in body mass, 20% of the tumor remains currently uncontained. So, the security chief in the Gate B timeline decided to go against O5's orders and nuke the site in order to contain SCP-682, a thing that they really didn't want to do for some odd reason. As it turns out, nuking 682 only tickled it, and really made it a lot worse. Now, half of 682 is just one big tumor, connected to a vast growing network of radioactive fungus that grows into living creatures to absorb their fluids. Not only do they not have all the fungus contained, they don't even know where 20% of the tumor is located. This is really a concern, because prior to this, 682 has never wanted to split itself into multiple bodies before, but now it seems to have completely reversed that, and wants to spread as far and wide as possible. Remember that gray goo scenario the O5s were worried about? Alright, so this is a lot to take in, and certainly there's no clear narrative thread here to roll out. SCP-9341 is an attempt to write the events of the game Containment Breach as it occurred from the Foundation's perspective, as well as the aftermath, or I should say, aftermaths. We're notably never given any real info from Walker's perspective, as far as I could tell, as that's what playing the game itself will provide, and his perspective varies wildly. From the Foundation's perspective, then, they have a man who can seemingly bounce through time to an infinite degree, but he's perpetually entangled with this specific site. Nothing is said about any version of Walker that escapes and lives free on some beach somewhere, or really anything about any future involvement with the Chaos Insurgency. Walker is entangled with Site CB because that's where the game takes place. They have a site now that exists in multiple different versions because of Walker's time shenanigans. They have anomalies randomly showing up at the site despite no one sending them there, because the game dev added new anomalies to the game. And they have a nuclear-infested version of SCP-682 that's spreading his fungi as much as he can. This is an extremely interesting article, and perhaps the best approach to tackling the concept of writing the events of the game from the Foundation's perspective. There are pages in this article that I didn't mention in this video, and I guarantee that there are pages I didn't even notice, but as always, I recommend you check out the article yourself to piece the rest together. It's certainly a complicated piece, where nothing is really spelled out clearly for us, but I suppose that's how the Foundation feels too.